Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Adam Michel, the Director of Tax Policy at the Cato Institute, to help me pick through what we see now is a challenge again to the members of Congress, to the chief executive, and to the people of the United States about the deficit, the overwhelming debt, and the shutdown altogether. However, we're going to start in history, as Adam's posted a piece at Civitas Outlook recently that has a backstory to it. And I choose to start with Ronald Reagan's tax cut of the 1980s because there was a promise in it. $3 of cuts for every dollar of increase in taxes. That was said and it was sold and it worked then. But, Adam, a very good evening to you. What I learned from the selling of the Reagan tax cut is that it wasn't a tax cut so much as a way to continue to spend money to achieve certain short-term goals or to satisfy political balance. Is that something in the past? Is that an antique idea for today that wouldn't work anymore? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you. The Reagan era, I think, is important to go back to, and is when people hear the Reagan tax cuts, they often think of the 1986 tax reform that was a massive reform of the whole tax code. But you have to go back to 1981 when Reagan actually proposed and got into legislation his most pro-growth tax cut that actually cut taxes. However, because they didn't cut spending when those tax cuts went into effect, in 1982, there was political pressure to roll some of those back. And there was a political promise that was sold that for every dollar of new taxes that were brought in, the Democrats at the time promised that they would cut $3 of spending as part of this deal. And ultimately, what happened was the tax increases happened. However, the spending cuts never materialized. And this is something that we've seen over and over again throughout history, that when these grand deals come together, whether or not the spending cuts are promised or not, or in legislation, the tax increases often go into effect, but the spending reductions, actual reforms to what goes out the door, either never materialize or don't have the teeth that they need to have in order to have staying power. And this is one of the reasons why our budget is so out of whack, is that Congress likes to keep taxes low, but they don't like to keep spending tethered to the revenues that are coming in.
You reported following the 1982 compromise in Congress, which was a democratically dominated Congress, that spending grew by double digits in the following years. Was that part of the deal, or did it just get away from them?
Yeah, so that was contrary to the deal, right? The deal was to cut spending and increase taxes as a sort of you give some and I give some political compromise. But instead, the opposite happened. They did raise taxes a little bit, but then they turned around and increased spending by double digits in the following years through the normal appropriations process and the political processes that were not constrained by that sort of verbal deal itself. We actually saw the same thing happen after 2017 when the last big Trump tax cut, Congress cut taxes by $1.5 trillion, but then Congress turned around and actually increased spending by hundreds of billions of dollars in the following years. And again, it's this disconnect between these two sides of the budget that has led us into the fiscal crisis that we're facing today.
Some simple definitions, Adam, for just a moment. Deficit and debt. How do they compare and contrast? What is the meaning?
Yeah, so the deficit is an annual number. It's the gap between what the government raises in taxes and what they spend in outlays, what goes out the door. And that annual deficit is what then accumulates into the national debt. And so we're running just shy of about $2 trillion in deficits annually. And so that means that each year we're adding an additional $2 trillion to our $7 trillion total debt. And so both numbers are important, but if we can get the deficit down, the debt is a problem, but it's the continual accumulation of more debt that is unsustainable.
To give you all a comparison in history to what a trillion means, in 1968, when it was necessary for the Johnson administration to ask Robert McNamara to leave, he moved to the World Bank. And that year, Robert McNamara complained, how come we haven't lent out as much as $1 billion we did last year? That was a big number in 1968. Now, Adam is routinely using trillion in the multiples, trillion. Which is,
and if you remember back to not even that far back in history, but to the Obama administration, one of the rallying cries of the Tea Party movement was tipping into $1 trillion deficits, and now we are double that, and so these numbers quickly become quite quaint, but they have real economic implications and real implications on Americans' livelihoods, and that we shouldn't lose track of that.
Sidestepping party, Adam identifies something I didn't know existed, Deficit Hawk Coalition. It's in two parts, but what is it in general committed to, Adam?
Yeah, so there's the Deficit Hawk Coalition are folks that are concerned about the deficit, concerned about this gap between the how much we bring in and how much goes out the door. And there are lots of people that are concerned about this gap in the economics profession, in both political parties. But just saying that there is a deficit doesn't tell you how to fix it. And so in my piece, I identify sort of two pieces of this coalition. The what I call the deficit hawks are the people that are just sort of balance at any cost. Analysis. And this means that they are just concerned about the deficit. So whether or not we close it by increasing revenues or decreasing spending, they're often agnostic as to which of these paths to go down. But then there's budget hawks that are also part of this broader coalition that are more concerned about the size and the scope of the size and scope of government. And I put myself in this camp, that the deficit is not a problem because we have a deficit in and of itself. The deficit is a problem because it is a sign that the government is too big, doing too many things in too many places of the economy, and in interfering in the lives of too many Americans. And so if you were concerned about the size and the scope of the government, the answer becomes much clearer. It's not a problem of not enough revenue, but a problem of too much spending.
So the balance at all costs side does not mind the growth of government. Is that correct? Because they're short-term thinking?
The balance at any cost sort of coalition is made up of folks in the center and on the left. You can find very progressive economic thinkers that are worried about the deficit because they understand that debt has a drag on the economy, that it ultimately is going to become unsustainable for us to continue to roll over the debt as interest payments explode on this debt that we're carrying over. But say I still think the government is too small, and the way to fix this is to increase taxes in order to fund the much larger government that they see as ideal. And that is a very different solution than the one that maybe you or I would put forward, and that the problem is not just this gap, but the fact that the government is doing too much on its face.
Adam has recommendations, but before we go there, I want to do backstory some more. Has this always been the case in Congress that they spend extravagantly for their programs and cut taxes now and again, but that the programs are the reason they're in Congress? Is that date back 100 years?
No, this has not always been the case. There's always the inclination for politicians to spend more than they tax because taxing is unpopular and subsidies and new programs are politically popular. Before sort of the modern era, there was a discipline to these things. Congress did strive to at least come close to balancing the budget. Most recent as the early 2000s, we had a balanced budget where we were bringing in more revenue than was going out the door. But it's sort of subsequent crises, the financial crisis, the COVID pandemic, combined with many of the underlying programs like Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid that are fueled by demographic change, that are on autopilot that Congress doesn't regularly assess. All of these factors have led to Congress sort of losing grip of the expenditure side and revenues not being able to keep up.
Did that change happen gradually, or is there a moment we can identify when they went from caring about spending to spending extravagantly?
Yeah, I think it happened gradually, sort of over time, and we've seen over the last couple of decades, the dam has really broken, and the voices for balanced budgets have become more and more sidelined, and the absolute explosion of the deficit without any political consequence is something new. This used to be at least a animating factor of at least one political party, and it seems, and while Republicans these days still give lip service to the deficit and the size of government, it doesn't seem like there's the commitment to these issues that there at least used to be.
What is to be done? Adam Michel for the Cato Institute, the director of tax policy. There is a way out. It's not a trap. But this is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.